Okay, Shavuot Tov, everyone. Hope you had a wonderful Shabbat Kodesh, and we're holding today in Masechet Chagiga, Daf Gimel, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, and we were right smack bang in the middle of the sugya over here. What we came to understand in the Mishnah is that it was apparently Chisuri Mechasra, and that we had to understand that there were two different madregas of a Cheresh. There's a Cheresh. Normally, the din of cheresh is irrelevant unless it's a cheresh she'ino medaber ve'ino shomea both. And then it's the same as a shaita ve'katan because he's chaser das, because he has no interaction with others, which is basically the definition of that. Mar she'ein kein, just a cheresh, it's irrelevant. I mean, it's like any other handicap. However, when it comes to the dinim of chagiga, that is not the case. And what we found out was that actually there are two different madregas. One is the darga of the what we call the semi-cheresh, meaning that he's only a cheresh in terms of not being able to be shomea. And he, of course, is chayev b'chol mitzvahs amuras patera. And the only thing is that he can't be mekayim the mitzvah of re'iyah for some reason. We haven't learned why. But he's not included in the mitzvah of re'iyah. We're about to find out why. But when it comes to the mitzvah of simcha, he is included. Now the question is l'gabei the mitzvah of chagiga, which we didn't talk about. And actually, there's a machlokas here. Well, we could talk about it in terms, it involves, of course, many shitas, but we could talk about it as a machlokas between the Rambam and Tosfos. So Tosfos takes for granted that chagiga is like simcha. And he has to explain why the Gemara then doesn't mention Chagiga and that it's included in Simcha. Whereas according to the Rambam, anyone who is pater from Re'iyah is by definition a pater from Chagiga as well. In which case, according to him, it's clear that the only discussion over here is relevant to Simcha. But now, why do we find this difference? This would be the beginning of the fourth line, which is where we're up to. Right on Gimel Amud Aleph. Asks the Gemara, well, I understand what you're saying, that there's two different dinim, but what's the basis? So why are we saying that a cheresh is potter when it comes to re'iyah? Masha enkeim, by simcha, a cheresh is chayev unless, of course, it means a total cheresh, which is the way it's normally used. Cheresh eino shomea veino medaber, then it's the same as a katan and a shaitan. It's supposed to be called a mitzvah amuras betera. Answers the Gemara, there's a special limud that tells us, the inyan re'iyah, that a cheresh is not included in the mitzvah of re'iyah. Now this takes us back a little bit to the machlokas that I mentioned to you at the beginning of the Masechet about what the status of nashim is in terms of the chiyav of re'iyah ba'azora, as opposed to the chiyav of re'iyah ba'karban. Remember that Rashi specified in the Mishnah re'iyah ba'azora, which the Rabbeinu Tam says obviously doesn't mean only re'iyah ba'azora. It means even re'iyah ba'azora. They're called that the nashim are peturis. And the reason it was important to state that was because in the Yerushalmi, it's clear that nashim are chayavot, as our Ketanim, you're believed to bring them for Re'iyah, because we learn it out from Hakel, where it says, Anashim Nashim Vitav. And therefore, we learn the same din to be true by Re'iyah, Ponim Bazor, by the Regel. Our Sugya, as Tosfos proves from numerous points in the Sugya, is certainly not like that. The Bavli doesn't hold like that. And according to the Bavli, the only comparison that we make to Hakel, between Hakel and Re'iyah, is coming up right now. And it does not include the idea of Nashim being Chayavot. And so, in fact, we do learn Re'iyah mihakel, because the Torah puts together Hakel et ha'am, ha'anashim v'anashim v'hataf, bevo kol Yisrael lirot. So now the Torah actually calls Hakel to be the equivalent of bevo kol Yisrael lirot. Now, the parshas of the pasuk, of course, is just saying that the hakel should be during the Chag HaSukkot, bevo kol Yisrael lirot. However, the smichus of the two, and the way the Torah seems to create them as equal, means that we are actually calling the hakel a time in which bevo kol Yisrael lirot. And we know that when it comes to the din of hakel, even a semi-cheresh, that is to say, is only deaf, is also not chayev in hakel. How do we know that? Asks the Gemara. But hata minola. Now, why indeed do we not learn out that nashim are chayavot from hakel? So that Tosfos says over here, our sugya holds that the idea of zechurcha is a specific teaching. Do not learn out the halacha of nashim from hakel to re'ia. That's why it stresses zechurcha. You can't take the ikar point, which is the Zechurcha, and say it doesn't apply because of the comparison to Hakel. And since it's true about Nashim, Kol Shekein, it would be true about the Ketanim, who Bechlan and Archayev in Mitzvahs. Okay, that's Tosi's approach here. And as I said, the Rabbi Natan shows that the Sugya throughout absolutely cannot work out according to the way the Yerushalmi learns. So, how do we know that we're taking for granted that for some reason, if he is a Eino Shomea, despite the fact that he is a Medaber, that he's not Chayev in Hakel? But how do we know that? Vahata minal. Ah, that's because it says in the Pasuk, Leman Yishmu'u Ulma'an Yilmedu. Vitanya, the Bryce explains, Leman Yishmu'u means Prat Limedaber Ve'eino Shomea. So someone who can speak but cannot hear is not included in the chiyuv, because it says he has to be able to hear. Uleman yilmedu means that even if he's a shomea, ve'eno medaber, he is also not included. So one thing's for sure. The very fact that the Torah is stressing that there needs to be the ability to be hearing, leman yishmu'u, that means that even though he can speak, he is potter from hakel. And from hakel we learn out to the unique situation of the mitzvah of re'iyah, where just deafness is not considered to be a mere handicap. It's considered to be a ma'akev gomor to the chiyuv of re'iyah. Now, interestingly enough, as we pointed out before, many things that normally would just be viewed as physical handicaps of some kind, when it comes to the din of re'iyah, are actually viewed as a complete and total p'tur from re'iyah, from different issues. We'll be going through them gradually as we go through the daf. So one of them is the inability to hear. How about the inability to speak? Well, the Gemara said that since it says leman yilmedu, means that they have to be able to speak, which implies, I mean, at least that's what the Gemara thinks. How do we know that leman yilmedu means that they have to speak? Apparently, you assume that lemeimra dechiloi mishtoi lo gamar, that somebody who cannot speak is incapable of yilmedu. And that's a very interesting assumption. But where would it come from? In fact, we know experientially that it simply is not true. I can tell you a story myself, says the Gemara. What about Hani Trei Ilme Dehabe B'Shvuvute de Rebbe? There were these two mutes. They could hear, but they couldn't speak a word. And they were in Rabbeinu HaKodesh's neighborhood, and they were B'nai Barta to Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada. They were grandchildren of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada. Some say that they were B'nai Achte, they were nephews of Rabbi Yochanan. And every single time that Rebbe would come into the Beit HaMidrash, these mutes would come in, and they would sit there in front of Rebbe. So, Abi Ayle V'yad Fikamayu, and everything that he said, they would be shaking their heads like they understood every word, and they would be moving their lips, even though they couldn't articulate themselves because they were mute. And Rebbe felt that it was a tremendous rachmanis, that these people wanted so much to participate in the learning, and he was mavakish rachamim on them, and they were cured, ve'itzu. And when they were cured, it turned out that these guys were incredible gedolim. They knew everything, anything that they had heard, they had learned. They were bekiyim in all of the Mishnayos, and the Sifra, and the Sifri, and they knew the whole Shas. I mean, come on. So what are you telling me that just because they can't speak, they can't learn? These people couldn't speak, and man, did they learn. So what's the meaning of saying that just because it says Alan Yilmadu means that they have to be able to speak? Ah, says Marzutra, that's not the point. The point is, it's a drusha. Leman yilmedu. Of course they can learn, but we were darshaning, laman yilamedu. They need to be able to teach. Since they can't teach because they can't speak, therefore they are putter. That was the basis of it. Your experience has nothing to do. There was never an assumption that just because they can't speak, they can't learn. Of course, that's not the case. Rav Ashi says, gentlemen, use your brains. Of course it means laman yilamedu. And it has to mean laman yilamedu, don't you see? Let's assume for a moment that the Gemara really thought that the issue would have been that they actually couldn't learn, okay? So then the whole thing wouldn't have made a bit of sense. Because if that's what you assumed, the Yisak Adaklan Laman Yilmedu, and it was true that the Gemara had made the ridiculous assumption that since they can't speak, which we know not to be true now, but we had made that assumption, that because they cannot speak, that they cannot learn. So, come on. I mean, if they can't hear, we already learned out from Laman Yishmu that they need to be able to learn. Isn't that true? Because that's what Laman Yishmu meant. They need to be able to absorb what it is that they're going to be hearing there when the Melech is reading at the Hakel, and they can't hear, so therefore they can't learn. But if you're telling me that that is the case, and the reality is that somebody who speaks, who cannot speak, even though he can hear, cannot learn, so then Laman Yishmu means to be able to learn. It doesn't mean to be physically hear noise coming into some organ. It means to hear, like we use always in the Gemara. I hear you. So I understand you. That was the whole point. And if that's the case, why say more? Just say Laman Yishmu that they should be able to understand. And since it's a given that if they can't speak, they can't understand. So obviously, if we're learning it from a different pasuk, it was not included in the not hearing. It's got to be a new drasha. What's the drasha from? It's a chiddush. Laman yilamedu. They need to be able to actually teach, not just to hear, not just to listen. So of course, don't come and tell me it must be that it was a drasha. Of course it must be that it was a drasha. Otherwise, it wouldn't have made any sense no matter what. Forget about your experiential evidence. That's irrelevant. Okay. Beautiful. Very, very lovely argument. Continues the Gemara. Let me just read that inside. Kivin de lo shama lo gomar, so I already would have known it from Laman Yishmu Nafka. Elavadai Laman Yilamedu. Omer Abitarnu. The amazing thing is that even if he's just deaf in one ear, he's Potter Min Hara'iyah. Because it says, in terms of the Hakel, it says that the Melech is supposed to be reading it be'oznehem. He has to be reading it in their ears, both ears. So if that's the case, it's not a question only of learning, it's a question of actual hearing. So even if they can hear in one ear, they would be put. Wait a minute, be'oznehem. Be'oznehem just means in the ears of all of the people of Klal Yisrael. It's not what it means. It doesn't mean be'oznehem, that it has to be dafka in their both ears. Now, Tosfos brings, it's amazing, from this week's parsha. It's always so weird. So we just had the laning today, which spoke about, v'livnei Aaron ta'aseh kutanot. Okay, so how many kutanot did you have to make for each one of the b'nei Aaron? That's exactly the question of how many ears that you have to be reading to be'oznehem. Because there was a plural of Kohanim, and there's a plural of Yisrael. Says Tosfos, this issue is fascinating because it's a machlokas in the Yerushalmi, whether in fact kotanot livnei Aaron means, as it does according to Rabbi Yossi, that according to the Rabbanan, rather, that you need to make two kutanot for every one. Whereas according to Rabbi Yossi, it's a reference to make to all of the B'nai Aaron kutanot in aggregate, in which case each one would only get one. Okay, so that's exactly the issue that we're talking about over here. So in any event, so the Gemara is finding now that Be'oznehem, if there isn't any other basis, then we would assume that it means Oznehem the Kulu Yisrael, and it's not a reference to the two ears of each member of Yisrael, says the Gemara, but wait a minute. I would have known that it has to be spoken into the ears of all of Yisrael because it also says in the Pasuk, Neged Kol Yisrael. And that was the original mitzvah that the Melech is supposed to be reading, and it has to be Neged Kol Yisrael. Bavo Kol Yisrael lirot et pnei Hashem Elokecha b'makom asher yivchar, tikra et haTorah hazot Neged Kol Yisrael be'ozneihem. So we already said Neged Kol Yisrael. Do you need to say Be'ozneihem to tell me Be'ozneihem to show Kol Yisrael? Of course it is. Therefore, the Be'ozneihem has got to be telling you that everybody has to have two ears. And if they don't have two functional ears, then even though they can be learning, it doesn't matter, because they would still be potter. That's Rabbi Tarkum's Chiddush. Ahumineged Kol Yisrael Nafka. Says the Gemara, no, but you cannot rely on Kol Yisrael, Mineged Kol Yisrael, because Yimineged Kol Yisrael, Afa Min Afa Gavda Lo Shama. Mineged Kol Yisrael could mean that the Melech has to be speaking to everybody, but they could be so far away that they don't hear anything. So how do I know that they would also need to be in a matzav in which they are able to hear? I mean, there's two completely different issues, no? So maybe that's why it needs to say Be'oznehem. Kotavachmona Be'oznehem, Hudashami, they have to be hearing. No, obviously not. Because we already explained that Laman Yishma'u means that they need to be able to understand. If they're not hearing anything, they can't understand. So that's a given. So now the question is, do they also need to have the physical apparatus for full Shemiyah? That's the question. So that's a different halacha. And that is what Rabbi Tanchum is coming to say. Now, another thing that Rabbi Tanchum says, even if a guy can get around, if he is lame in one foot, he's also patur from Re'iyah. Chiger baraglo achat, patur min ha-Re'iyah. Now, forget about Hakel. Now, we're not learning from Hakel. Let's go directly to the mitzvah of Re'iyah. And remember, Shalosh Regalim. Shalosh Regalim means feet. So you have to have your feet. So that means each one of the Yomim Tovim, you are Chayev if you have feet. But if you only have one foot, then you're not Chayev. I thought that we needed Regalim to tell me that Prat Lebaalei Kabin, that if someone is actually an amputee of a foot, and instead he has some kind of prosthesis, that he is potter. But that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about chigera means that he's unable to move his foot. I mean, it's not bale kabin. How do you know that you can use the pasuk for that if we need the pasuk to tell me that he has to have a physical foot? Okay, so this we're taking for granted. If he doesn't have a physical foot and one of his feet is missing and he gets around a prosthetic foot, that he would not be included in the chiyav of Re'iyah. And we assumed that that is because it says regel. Says the Gemara, actually, that is because it says pa'am. And pa'am means the palm of the feet. So if he's missing the foot, even though he's got a leg, so he's called a bal kabin, and therefore he would be potter because of the pa'amim, not because of the regel. So the regel is coming to tell me he has to be able to move his leg. And therefore, he's a chiger, he can't move his leg. So here we're getting closer to understanding the physical requirements that we spoke about. The organs of the body here are very important to be taken literally. Okay, so we talked about having both eyes, the use of both eyes, the use of both legs, the bottom of the foot, all of these things now, the need for two ears. Whoa, these are like things, of course, then it's no longer so strange that we should find Cheresh because of his inability to hear, to be potter, even though he's certainly Chayev in all the other mitzvahs of the Torah. So when it comes to Simcha, he would be Chayev. When it comes to Re'iyah, he would be potter. According to the Rambam, anyone potter in Re'iyah is potter from Chagiga. According to Tosfos, Chagiga is the equivalent of Simcha and isn't tied to Re'iyah. Now let's talk about some of the other things. This business about Pa'amim, can you show me how we learn it, Pa'amim? Yes, Titania, Pa'amim, you think Pa'amim means times? Well, so does Regalim mean times. But the fact is that Pa'amim also means feet, because ain't Pa'amim, elo Regalim. V'chein hu omer, tirmas no regal, ragle ani, pa'amei dalim. So apparently it's synonyms. The feet of the poor and the pa'amim of the poverty stricken. The Omer, Mayafu pa'amayach bana alim bat nadiv. How beautiful are your pa'amim in shoes? What does that mean? Your times in shoes? Since where does time wear shoes? So obviously the context of the pasuk is that it's talking about your feet, specifically the part of your body that goes into a shoe. And that is exactly why pa'amim comes to tell me not someone who wears a prosthetic foot because he doesn't wear a shoe. Oh, okay, so then we now understand that we have two separate limudim over here, one from Regel and one from Pam. Lovely, what a coincidence. Dorash Rava, my dechtiv mayafu pa'amayach bana alim bat nadiv. What in fact does that pasuk mean? How beautiful are your feet in shoes, the daughter of the giver? What does it mean? It means kama na'im ragleim shel Yisrael b'sha'a sha'olim l'regel. How beautiful are the feet of Klal Yisrael when they're using them to do the Aliyah L'Regel. And what does Bat Nadiv mean? Bito shel Avraham Avinu, shenikra Nadiv. We know that this is a reference to Avraham Avinu. Of course, what was Avraham Avinu's life all about? Lech Lecha. And as Rashi says, Kol Halichotav was always towards Har HaMoriah. Rashi says that twice, different places. So then that means that the Bat Nadiv is the Aliyah L'Regel, almost by definition. And it's a reference, therefore, to Avraham Avinu, who is called a Nadiv. Where is he called a Nadiv? Shneamar, Nidivei Amim Ne'esofu Am Elohei Avraham. What does that mean? Those who gave themselves over from the various nations to be Gerim, they've gathered together and they are the nation of the God of Abraham. What does that mean, the God of Abraham? Elohei Avraham, Elohei Yitzchak v'Yaakov. What are you saying, Gerim? Don't enter Klal Yisrael to have the Sholosh Avos? Ela, what's the Pshat Elohei Avraham? Because they took on themselves the path of Avraham Avinu, who was the first one to give of himself and to arrive from his own understanding that he wants to become an Am of Hashem. And that's what these people did. And therefore, they're called the Nedivei Amim, who are like Bito Shel Avraham. Exactly. Lovely. So that's Tchilu L'Gerim. Omar Rav Kahana, Dorash Rav Nosson Bar Minyume Mishum Rabbi Tanchum. Since I'm telling you over the drushes of Rabbi Tanchum, don't forget that very famous one. My dichtiv ha-boreik ein bo mayim. Mimashva sh'neemar ha-boreik ein yodeash ein bo mayim. Ela mayim ein bo aval nechashim va'akravim yesh bo. This was the drush that we had when we were talking about also by Sukkah and by Chanukah, if you recall. Both of them had to do with the height of 20 amos. The Borek Ein Bo Mayim was related, apparently, to that, for an obvious reason. They couldn't have thrown Yosef into a bor that was full of Nechashim V'Akrovim, because what's the difference if it didn't have any water? That's ridiculous. And therefore, it must mean that there's such a thing as Lo Sholeit Behem Ayin. That might have something to do with Chagiga anyway, which we'll see. Okay, so let's continue. Tana Rabbana, there was a maisa with Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Elazar Chasma that they went to be mekabel ponim on the yontev of Rabbi Yoshua. And they went to Pekin, which of course is Barnea's neighborhood, and Amar Lahem, so Rabbi Yoshua asked them, so what was the chiddush in the Beit HaMidrash today? Amrulo, so they said, well, we wouldn't tell you over any chiddushim, we're all your talmidim. We drink from your meimecha. So why don't you tell us? Nah, says Rabbi Yeshua, come on. Afal pikein. E if shar lebet ha-midrash b'lo chidush, it's impossible. There must have been a chidush. Let me ask you something. Whose week was it to give the drush? Remember that this was the time of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah when he was splitting, when they brought him back in, and they were splitting Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah with Rabbi Gamliel. So what was the whose week was it? Well, it was actually Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's week. Okay. And what was the sugya? Come on, let me encourage you to talk. Well, the sugya was Hakel. And what was the drasha? Okay, we'll tell you. The drasha was that it says Hakel et ha'am, ha'anashim v'hanashim v'hataf. So the drasha went like this. Im anashim ba'im lilmod, we understand that the men are coming to learn. The women, we understand, have to be coming because they're ba'ot lishmoa. But what in the world are people bringing little kids for, and why would the Torah say that there is a chiyuv to bring little children? What would be the point of bringing such little children? Don't understand. That was what we were talking about in the sugya. So, okay, that's a very good question. Who asked that question originally? Paro. Paro Melech Mitzrayim asked that question. Isn't that so? He told Moshe, what in the world are you talking about taking all of the kids? What are you going to do with kids? Otamatem evakshim. Didn't you say that you wanted to do all of this Aveda? Kids don't do the Aveda. So why are you bringing the kids? Now, that's a very good question, apparently. And in fact, this was exactly the question that we raised in the Beis HaMedrash. By the way, before we continue, just let me point out that when it says Nashim Ba'ot Lishmoa, so what does that mean, Ba'ot Lishmoa, as opposed to Anashim Ba'im Lilmod, in the sense of Lishmoa? Does it mean that they're just hearing the words of the Melech, or what? So it's a little bit weird. So some learn, but the point is, the Nashim Ba'ot Lishmoa, what the mitzvah is in order to be Mekayim, they're not just learning in terms of knowing things. They are learning what needs to be done. And therefore, it's always very nogea reality. It's not some type of conceptual issue. And even the halachas, so this is the Beit HaLevi's approach, that even the halachas that a woman is mitzuvah in, the learning is a way in which she's able to be mekayim the mitzvah. It's not the theory of the yediyah in the sense of lahagdil Torah v'lahadira and so on. However, there are many shitas that disagree with this. And in fact, the Bir Halacha brings that in those mitzvahs that she is mechuyevet in, and therefore she makes birchas ha'Torah when she learns about it. So if she's able to make birchas ha'Torah, and according to the Bir Halacha and the Mishnah Brura, that those who say that she makes the Birchas HaTorah because of the chiyuv of learning the halachas, that she can even be motzi, a man, in the chiyuv of Birchas HaTorah. So obviously, he's not learning the way the Beis HaLevi is learning, because according to the Beis HaLevi, it's only like a heksher mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah in and of itself. And that would be the difference then between Lilmod and Lishmoa. So, because that's anything that is nogea, her mitzvahs, so she, if you hold like the Beis HaLevi, it makes sense. If you hold like the Mishnah Brura, then there's got to be another difference between Lilmod and Lishmoa. So, the Taz paskins, that Lishmoa means that she is there to hear the straightforward pshat about what to do. But she's not meant to be taught all of the various fancy sfaras and so on, which always we're afraid that she's going to be motzia l'divrei tiflis. So she hears the mitzvah and understands what needs to be done. But unless she goes to learn herself and she is motivated to be an actual lomed, which of course there, of course, she learns whatever she wants to learn. And the pashtus is, of course, that if she wants to learn, then of course you teach her. Now, the question, many people don't understand that, so that's not so posh to them. And because of that, there's a lot of discussion. They think that the din not to teach women Torah is a din not to teach women Torah, which it's not. It's a din not to teach your daughter Torah, because it means you don't put her in a matzav that you put your son, which is to make them feel that they absolutely have to do this, and if not, they're not doing what they need to do. A woman who is motivated to learn and wants to learn, of course you teach her Torah. And because of that, all of the discussion today, which is still very nogea, because it's institutional discussions. And so the Chofetz Chaim paskins, even institutionally, it's certainly, according to the situation today, that it's absolutely essential to give basic ideas and concepts to the woman, besides Stam, the idea of the mitzvahs that she's supposed to do, that is the pashtus of the Sugya. Rav Hirsch also speaks about this. Anyway, so that would be, this is just an aside, but that would be the meaning of Nashim Ba'ot Lishmoa. But now let's get back to the question. What in the world, asks the Gemara, is the point of bringing the kids? What are the kids coming for? Obviously, we're talking about that they're not in a matzav to be able to learn. They're just little kids. Why are we bringing little kids? And he explained, they said, Kedei litein sachar lemevien. It's to give sachar to the parents who are bringing the little kids. Now, that's an awfully dumb shot, isn't it? I mean, why would they get getting sachar is only because there's a point in bringing them. So if there's no point in bringing them, I mean, you're still back with the original question. So what did we think he meant? Did we think that Rabbi Elazar Azariah was saying the Torah created an artificial, nonsensical thing to do because this way you'll get sachar? Is that true about all mitzvahs? All the mitzvahs are ridiculous and they're there because this way we can get sachar? That's an awful shot, isn't it? So what in the world is it supposed to mean? Since nobody seems interested, I'll leave it to you to think about. Oh, we got one person who's a little interested. Oh, how do you like that? How do you like that? Oh, we've got even a little smile from La. Aha. So
I'm interested, but I don't want to have to read the spike bar without drinking.
Of course. To understand the answer, and I think this was really the muck. You have to think about what Moshe was telling Paro. How did Paro understand the answer? Moshe says, we're going with everybody. With Nashenu, Zikenenu, Tapenu, we're going with everybody. So what was that saying to Paro? You idiot, we're planning to escape. No, it was not saying that, right? Okay, so what was it saying? So obviously what it was saying was, what do you think this is? Like a kind of duty that we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we're afraid he's going to eat us up? And is that what you really thought it's about? When we were trying to get you to understand you might lose your slave population? Well, that's not what it's about. What it's about is the fact that this is a moment of national giluy and kirva. What do you mean, don't bring the kids? It's insane. But they're not part of us? This is not about whether they understand or don't understand. This is life. This is our families. This is our future. This is our commitment together. That's the point. Litein schar lemeviyehem. And therefore, the comment of Tosfos, which says, and people rely on this to bring kids to shul, does not mean that this is a good reason to bring kids to shul. Exactly. So, okay, it'd be very nogeah how one understands it. But then it's like a completely new insight into what is happening in Hakel. Because what is happening is something that, in fact, does include everyone. So that would be the pshat. So, Rabbi Yehoshua.
Maybe is it also down to the fact that the experience of the coming? My experience of bringing kids somewhere is always...
No, because what we're talking about is if there was a purpose other than that, then he would have said that that's the purpose. Don't you understand? That's the beauty of the drasha. It's true that the purpose will not be felt by an infant, but that doesn't matter. The purpose is still there. Otherwise, if there was a purpose, he would have said, bring the children so they have the experience, right? But that's not what he said. So obviously that's not the answer. Correct?
Isn't it for the parents' experience?
Yes, but that's the parents' experience. Exactly. It's for the parents' involvement in a national moment that is their entire future. That's what he's saying. So he said, oh my God, that's beautiful. You made me beg you to tell me that? Margalit Tova Itabiatchem, you had this pearl, this incredible jewel, and I had to sit and beg you to tell it to me? What were you trying to do to me over here? Were you mevakesh to hide it from me? I should lose it. Bikashtem labda mimeni. What'd you put me through such loops for here? And then, va'od darash. So now, va'od darash, there's two ways of learning it. According to Rashi, va'od darash, they were encouraged to tell over another drash of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elchanan learns, and then he went ahead and was dorish. Much more mashma like Rashi. But anyway, va'od darash. Et Hashem he'emarta hayom, v'Hashem he'emircha hayom. So what does that mean? He'emarta means like this. Amar lama kadosh baruch hu Yisrael. Atem, asituni chativa achat ba'olam. You made me one amazing shevach in the world, because yit amru ko po'al yaven. What is yit amru ko po'al yaven? It means they make a big fuss about themselves, about how great they are. They're mishtabeach in themselves. So then when it says, Hashem he'emircha hayom, it's the same lashon. You turned me into something so special in the world to show the world how much I meant to you and how nothing else was comparable. I'm going to do the same for you. Ani aseh etchem chativa achat ba'olam. Atem asitunim chativa achat ba'olam dechtiv shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And when every time you say that, that is megala the yichud of Hashem. And ani aseh etchem chativa achat ba'olam shenemar. Umi kamcha Yisrael goy achat ba'aretz. Now you'll notice, mi kamchisor goya chadbaretz is also something that we said today. Right? In Mincha. Mincha of Shabbos. Now Tosfos points out that Mincha of Shabbos is an anomaly. Because the other tefillos of Shabbos are about Shabbos. Why is Mincha on Shabbos not about Shabbos? How come it doesn't stress the Shabbos? What is it? Why is it talking about Atachad, Vishimcha Achad, Umikamcha Yisrael, Goyachad Ba'aretz, and so on? What happened to Shabbos? It says, Tosfos, that this Gemara that we just had is expanded in the Medrash to be not only Klal Yisrael Shevach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Kevayachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shevach of Yisrael, but it's also Shabbos being exactly the third partner in all of this. And that Shabbos is made on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and on Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Yisrael are both made on the Shabbos. So that the Shabbos, the reality of Shabbos in terms of Ma'aseh Bereishis, is made that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Echad. And Shabbos, because of the unique relationship to Yisrael, is made that Yisrael are Yechinim Bumais, and they're the ones that are Shayach to Shabbos. And therefore, we could put together, Mika Amcha Yisrael Goy Echad Be'aretz, is part of Atah Echad, V'Shimcha Echad, is about Shabbos. Ha! Except it's a deeper sense of being about Shabbos. Lovely Tosfos. Okay, anyway. Afu patach v'darash. So here, he too, and here this Afu patach. Who is the Afu? Is it the Afu that was before the Afu? So Rashi says Afu actually is more about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Whoa. Whereas Rabbi Elchanan says, no, Afu, questions are regardless, Afu before, but Afu over here for sure is a reference to Rabbi Yoshua. Now that he already commented, so now we can understand it to be he started saying. And what did he say? One of the most important drushes in all of Shas. It gives us an insight into the nature of Torah itself. And so he said, look at the pasuk. Divrei chachamim kedarvonot, uchamasmerot netuim, ba'alei asupot. What exactly is that all about? So the words of the chachamim are like darbanot. Darbanot are ox goats. Divrei Torah like ox goats? And they're like nails that are planted well, and then they are the owners of collections, all given from one shepherd. Whew. What in the world? So Gemara, what is Shlomo HaMelech saying here? In what sense is a Divrei Torah considered to be the equivalent of a Darbein? Shlomo HaMelech. Now, the pashtus of the Darbein is that it is a feedback control mechanism, not like the Darbein that we found in Maseches Kelim, which over there was talking about a Darbein that's at the end of a stick, which you use to control the ox. And there it had that size that we use, this godel of the Darbein and so on. That's not what it means over here. Over here, it's a reference to a feedback mechanism on the shore. So it's planted on the neck of the shore as part of the yoke. If the shore turns to one side, instead of keeping the head straight, it gets a prick in the side of its cheek. And that puts it back immediately to the correct side. Turns the other side, it gets a prick on the other side. And therefore, it ends up maintaining its direct walk down the telem, which is the way we want it to walk in order to be able to do the plow. So lo malacha, just like the darben, is mechavin et hapara l'tlema eha, lo tzi chayim lo lam. So the darben gets the para to go straight along the furrow in order to bring life. What is that life? All of the peiros that are going to be growing out of that furrow that it just plowed. Af divrei Torah, mechavnim et lomdomihem, midarkei mita ledarkei chayim. That's what divrei Torah does to those who learn it. Now, why does the pasuk continue? Because you might have thought, well, I mean, a darben is basically movable, right? I mean, I could take it off of this shore and put it somewhere else. In which case, if you're comparing divrei Torah to a darben, so maybe it means the same thing. Maybe it's like it's movable, you know, well, as long as you're using it, you know, but you can always throw it off and then it's not going to leave any impact on you. And no. Therefore, the next word is kimas merot. They're like nails. Nails, but wait. A nail, when you nail in a nail, it leaves something missing because there's a hole where the nail was. So imam masmer zechaser velo yeter. So you'll say, okay, so then if you bang in a nail, you're going to be missing something. Ah, so maybe Tav Divrei Torah that way, because a lot of people feel that. You know, you've been sitting and learning Torah, it's going to, yeah, I understand it's got good things, but it's going to be costing you this, and it's going to be costing you that, and all of the good things you could have had if you weren't wasting all your time sitting in the yeshiva learning, you would have been able to do other things, and so on and so forth. And there's a serious cheshbon that people have, you know? So maybe Divrei Torah end up causing you cheser v'lo yeter. Oh, no. That's why it says masmerot nituim. These are nails that are like planted in the ground. If it's a netiya, if it's a sapling, doesn't it grow? It's por v'rava. Af Divrei Torah, porim v'ravim. And why does it continue on to say ba'alei asupot? Ba'alei asupot refer to talmidei chachomim who sit in different groups learning together. Yoshvim asupot asupot voskim batorah. And they're all being osik. And everybody's got a different opinion. I mean, never do you find as many different opinions as you do with Talmidei Chachamim. So, you would say, my God. I mean, listen to this. Halolo mitamin, halolo mitarin. Halolo osrim, halolo matirin. Halalu poslim, halalu machshirim. Obviously, these are different issues, right? Tuma and Tyra, Isser veheter, Psul and Heksher. You know, is it a kosher Kohen? Is it a kosher child? Is it a mamzer? That's Psul veheksher. So a person would come to the conclusion, oh, forget about it, man. That's like trying to figure out what the scientists are saying about corona. Shema yomar adam echani lamei Torah meata. So how am I supposed to get to any kind of conclusions? Everybody's got a different opinion and the data shows whatever you want it to show, right? Talmud lomar nitnu miro echad. Kulam el echad nitanam. All of them were given from one God. Parnas echad amaran. And there was one mefarnes of Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu. He said every one of these possibilities, mipi adon kol ha'asim baruch hu, dechtiva yedaber Elohim et kol ha'devarim ha'ele. All of these various opinions are all outgrowths of different ways of applying Divrei Torah with minds that are different. And so you're asking, how am I supposed to learn Torah now? Very simple. Afata, asei oznecha ke'afar chesed. This is the basis of the Hebrew word for the telephone receiver, which is the Afar Chesed, because normally an Afar Chesed is a grain hopper, and a grain hopper was used to collect, it still is today, to collect all the grain as it comes in, and it comes in like a funnel into the processor. And so, but because the Gemara uses it for your ears, so Ben Yehuda used it for a telephone. So it becomes the Afar Chesed, right? Perfect. beautiful. Anyway, yeah, no interest in anybody over here. Anyway, you can do the same thing for your ears. And then, k'nelechav lev mevi. Now, obviously, after you got all the pieces coming into your ears, there's got to be a processor, right? Where's the processor? The processor is the lev mevin. You have to understand all of them and where they're coming from. You've got to be able to clearly understand the ones who are being metame, the ones who are being tohar, the divrei ha'osrim, the divrei matirin. Don't just add it up, for God's sake. Think about it. Come to understand it. Et divrei ha'poslin, et divrei ha'machshirin, and then says Rashi, and then make your determination of who the halacha is like in your mind, for God's sake. What are you telling me? Eichani lo mitor miyata. What are you, a pipsqueak or something? You're supposed to be able to throw your mind into it. And bedavka, the broader it is, and the more differences there are, the more exciting and place there is for your determination. And so, Rabbi Yehoshua said, oh my God, beautiful, beautiful drushes. What can I tell you? Ein dor yatom shereb Elazar ben Azariah sharui b'tocho. You know, everybody's talking about all the time about we live in a dor yatom. This ain't no dor yatom. If Reb Elazar ben Azariah is giving drushes like this, then this is like one of the great dorot. Hey, I mean, why did they put him through so many hoops before they were going to tell him? I mean, Reb Yochanan ben Broka and Reb Elazar ben Chasma. They should have just said, you know, yeah, we had great drushes. Instead, they said, well, we don't really want to tell you the drusha. You tell us the drusha. And then he had to go, okay, whose drusha was it? Okay, what was it about? Yeah, okay. And what did he say, damn it? What did he say? I mean, couldn't they just tell him? So Lamer Lobad, why didn't they just tell him? Because they were very nervous because of something that once happened. And what once happened was the Maisa of Rabbi Yossi ben Durmaskis. Because what happened was that Rabbi Yossi ben Durmaskis once went the same way that he was going to, that they had gone to be Mevaker, the Rebbe, on Yontif. He went to be Makbil Pnei, it should say Rebbe Eliezer, who was not part of the Beis HaMedrash because he had been put into Cherem, the Rambam says, because of the story with the, with the Tanur Shalachnai. So they went to see him, and he said, so ma chidush haya bebeit HaMidrash hayom. So they told him, we actually took a vote, and the Beis Din paskened that Ammon and Moab are supposed to, during Shvius, because Shvius isn't Neheg there, and therefore you need to take off Meiser. Which Meiser do you take off on the seventh year? We know what you take off on the first, second, third. We know what you take off on the fourth, fifth, and sixth. But we never heard about taking Meiser on the seventh because there is no Meiser on the seventh. But over here, since Min Rabbanan, there's a Chiyuv of a Meiser because there is no Shvius. We'll talk tomorrow about why is there no Shvius, in fact, because this way we'll be able to get back into our Shvius. So anyway, but there is no Shvius. So what they do is they take off Meiser Ani. Tremendous chiddush. So Rabbi Eliezer said to him, okay, you know, Gudnik, stick your hands out because I'm going to have your eyes pop out into your hands, okay? Pshot yadecha v'kabel einecha. That's what you deserve. So he does. Pashat yadav, and his eyes pop out. He went blind. Bacha Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer started to cry. V'yamar, sod Hashem li're'av u'brito lo odiyam. Those people who have Yira Shamayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them secrets that they really don't deserve to know on their own. And with his bris of Torah, he gives them the information that they need. And then he turns to them. Amalo, he says to Rabbi Yossi, look, you guys are tremendous chutzpah nyaks, idiots. Telling me a halacha that was a halacha that I knew and that was mekubal for the days of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, like halacha Meshmi Sinai. Kind of idiots, if I tell you, what did they say? You come and tell me, oh, we had a big chiddush. Bunch of kids who don't know what the heck you're talking about. Well, okay, so they didn't want to hear that again when Rabbi Yehoshua asked them, so what was the drasha? No, thank you very much. We don't have anything much to say, and we certainly don't want our eyes popping out. So apparently he felt it was more like being saying over a hayrah b'fnei rabbi, you know, so they were afraid. I mean, if he holds that it's like a being meira hayrah b'fnei rabbi, so they should have said. Apparently, he's angry because they should have said, "Well, what do we know? You know it all. Well, just tell me what they said." So then we could have told you what they said without it pretending to inform you of something. But the chutzpah of coming to tell Rabbi Eliezer halacha, like, wow, we really made a great discovery today, is outrageous. So they didn't want to do the same thing with Rabbi Yoshua. So, all right, please, Barnea, let me finish. So he said, Amarlo, Lech emor lehem al tachushu lemiyanechem. You should go and tell them, look, you don't have to worry about whether you're right or wrong. You're definitely right. Because kach mikublani mi Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sheshoma mi rabbi, halacha l'moshe misinai, which of course can't possibly mean halacha l'moshe misinai because we're talking about a derabbanan of something that occurred later. But it's as if, that's how the Rush understands it, it's so borer, and it was from so long ago, that Amon and Moab are Maisrim Maiser Oni Beshvius. Why? Matam Harbe Krachim Kavshu Ole Mitzrayim Velo Kvashum Ole Babel. Because there were many cities like we saw back in Megillah. Many cities were kavush by the Ole Mitzrayim. Remember, this was a major sugya that we had in Shvius. That there's the difference between the Aratzot. This is, we went through all the maps that Rabbi Neah gave us. So all of the areas that were kavush with Ole Mitzrayim but were not kavush with Ole Bavel do not have the din of the full Shemitah. And we spoke about what the halachas are different in those two areas. That there were areas that were not kavush, but Dafka, even though the Ole Bavel lived there, they did not give them Kedusha. As we'll see, Mipnei Shekedusha Rishona Kitcha L'Shayita V'lo Kitcha L'Atid Lavol. And that's because when the Olam Mitzrayim were Mekadesh, so they were only Mekadesh B'keach, the Kibush. And therefore, the moment the Kibush was bottle, as the Rambam explains, so the source of the Kedusha was the Kibush. And they were not Mekadesh Yit L'Atid Lavol. And then when they came back from Bavel, even though they came to these territories, they made a conscious decision that they are going to leave this without Kedusha Sa'aretz. Why? Because they wanted areas that would be planting during Shemitah and that would be giving the Meiser and all of the other things, Lekha, Chikha, Peya, like this, there would be so many tzaras for the Aniyim because of all the gezeiros about Tzvichin and everything else. So this way, the Aniyim have what to be Semech on. So hinichum kadesh yismuchu alehem aniim b'shviit, that they left it bedavka for then. Tana. And then what happened at the end? La'achir shenit yashva da'ato, after Rabbi Eliezer cooled off, he said, yihirotzen shiachzor enei Yossi l'mekayman, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should put Yossi's eyes back so that he should become capable of seeing again. And indeed, v'chazur, they came back. Now, you'll notice how all of the stories over here are involved with eyes, right? That's because we're talking about Re'iyah. And when he said to Rabbi Yossi, put out your hands and get your eyes, how do you say that? Pekiyin, Pakeayin, eyes pop out. But Pekiyin was the place where the whole story started with Rabbi Yoshua. And the story ends with, indeed, a pikiat ha'ayin. And we're going to see over all of the dapim that are coming up that the question of tears, eyes, seeing, learning, nature of Torah, all are very deeply interrelated with the aspects of this mesechet, which are about re'iyah. So do not be shocked that there is a very powerful theme that will follow us around. Tana Rabbanan, Ezehu Shoteh. We talked about the idea of the one who is a cheresh. What defines the Shoteh? Is there a definition of a Shoteh? I mean, like, it's just people feel he's crazy? Well, somebody who does crazy things, like, let's say he's Yotzei Yechidi Balayla. He walks out alone at night to places where nobody's around. He goes and he sleeps overnight in the Beit HaKvarot. I mean, what is that? Or he's Mikareat Ksuto. He's tearing his clothes for no reason. Says Ravuna, well, wait a minute. We need for all of these things to be done. I mean, it's not that he just does one of these things. He does these three things, you know, and like those three things together, that proves that he's nuts. Rabbi Yochanan says, why? Even one crazy thing should be enough for him to be nuts. So now the question is, differences in the Rishonim, but the parshas from the Rambam is that anything that is nuts is enough to confirm that he's nuts. The question is, these particular things are not really 100% nuts. And that's the point. So that's exactly why, now the Gemara is going to ask why this is, but that's exactly why Ravuna said, well, we would need to have all three of these. So, hey, Chidami, what do you mean? I mean, if he does it like he's nuts, so then why is it different than anything else he would do? That he's nuts, you know, I don't know. So even one of them. So why would Ravuna say, no, if he does only one of them, he's still considered to be sane. And if he's not doing them in a nutty way, so that there's a way to understand it, so then even if he does all of them, if all of them are understandable, so then he shouldn't be nuts. Now, the truth is, we don't know that there's a reason for any of these things, right? So he's doing it, as far as we're concerned, we could say he's crazy. But there might be an odd reason for people doing things that seem crazy to us. So, like, imagine, okay, the guy is sleeping in the cemetery. That's pretty crazy. But suppose this guy is on a program to learn how to do kishuf. Right? So if he wants to learn how to do kishuf, he might find it very attractive to live in a cemetery and get used to speaking to ghosts and shadim and so on. So he's got this idea that he will understand Stephen King better if he lives in a cemetery. Okay, so maybe he's a literary critic. I don't know. I mean, you're saying that he's Dafka crazy. I mean, there might be some what's the word to madness? Not pattern. What's the word? Method. Thank you. That's the word. So there might be some method to his madness, right? Okay. And then the guy, so maybe he does this Kadesh Tishrael of Ruach Tumah, okay? He goes out at night alone. I mean, it could be that he's being affected by Gandrifus Achte. Gandrifus is a kind of, Rashi says, either it's a mental state of profound sadness, and he's got to get out. I got to get out. Now, profound sadness is not insanity. So, I mean, you know, he may need to get out, or it could be, Rashi says that it's a physical illness, which is just makes him feel very, very hot, and he needs to get fresh air. So fine, so he's going out to get fresh air. I mean, it's not all that likely, but it's possible. You can't decide a guy's crazy because he's walking around at night. And as far as tearing his clothes, you know, he may be a deep thinker. maybe he's a Baal Machshava, you know, like they say in Yeshiva. Oh, he's like a Valdeke Baal Machshava. He's like a Valdeke Baal Machshava. You know, he can be thinking so hard that he's twirling his clothes around his hands. And meanwhile, they're tearing. He doesn't even notice. No, him or Baal Machshava is so. So he gets lost in his deep thoughts. But if he does all three, says Ravuna, then that would explain why we would consider him to be a nut. Because, look, let's take the case of negichas, right? So let's say you have a shor that is nogeach three shvarim. Now, if he's nogeach three shvarim, we come to the conclusion, man, this shor doesn't like the competition, okay? If he's nogeach three camels, then we come to the conclusion, whoa, this shor sure doesn't like camels. Maybe they look like they're stuck up to him, and he doesn't like animals that are stuck up, right? Then if the shor is going to go after three sheep, then we would say, well, the shor is a bully and takes advantage of any little animals, right? But if he goes ahead and he is nogeach a shor, and then a chamor, and then a camel, so then he becomes mu'ad for everything, because he doesn't really care what it is that he does. He is just looking for opportunities to be aggressive. So then we come to the conclusion that he is just generally aggressive. Now, if that's the case, same thing is true over here. Yes, I can explain his Stephen King tendencies. And yes, I can explain his feeling hot at night. And yes, I can also explain his being a deep Baal Machshavas. But there's too many coincidences over here. And remember, we always look for elegant explanations, right? Well, elegant explanations are, this guy's out of his cotton picking head. And therefore, he has a din of being insane. So that's the idea. If something doesn't have any explanation, then he's automatically nuts, right? But otherwise, we would need to see a pattern.